welcome into another episode of the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer,
Frank Arcuri,
and thanks for listening. And hey, if you happen to make the mistake of not knowing that this is not the Leftovers Podcast, by all means, pull a chair, stay a while here, because we always know the score.
Wow. Get right into it.
J.R. Smith. Are you kidding me, man?
My God, that was funny.
Look, dude, this is the same man that threw soup at a coach. Threw soup at a coach.
Yeah.
So I'm not shocked at who this was. But at the same time, I'm still stunned over this 2 days later. 3 days later. 4 days later? 3 days later.
Three.
3 days later.
It was Thursday. Game one was Thursday.
Forgive me for not knowing the number there. Dude, you are... All you have to do is turn around and look at the scoreboard. Look up and look
this
at the scoreboard.
This has been pretty much the main topic of conversation for like every sports.
George Hill, meanwhile, just sneaking out the side door being like, yo, yeah, focus over on J.R. Smith after I missed a free throw there. The strangest thing is there are so many mistakes on this one play that happened. One, the missed free throw. Two, J.R. Smith grabbing it and taking off the other way. Three, nobody calls a timeout when he's taking off with the basketball.
Yeah.
Well, you could call
it. Did they have timeouts left?
They had one. Each team had one.
Okay.
And everyone thought what would happen is, hey, if Hill makes this free throw, Golden State can call a timeout. They get it over, advance past half court.
Yeah.
And they could set up a really high chance scoring play for them.
Yeah, 4 seconds left.
Only down by one.
Yeah.
You only need a normal bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's on the table.
Or even try to draw a foul somehow.
But again,
I doubt you would be able to.
But with four seconds, everything's on the table.
That's a lot of time.
And Cleveland has to cover a lot of space.
That's a lot of time in basketball.
So everyone's thinking, okay, if he makes this, if the 80% free throw shooter makes this second free throw, well, they can call a timeout and advance it past half court. Cleveland had a timeout as well. So there was that. There was LeBron sitting at the top of the 3-point arc.
Yeah.
If you're trying to kill the clock anyway, why not pass it to Bron? And
like, of course, I don't know how you're not going error, to Bron no
and
matter
of course,
what.
And of course, the most egregious error of them all, not knowing that the score happened to actually be tied. You could have put one up, tried to draw a foul yourself, and be the hero. The best part is this is not J.R. Smith's first time not knowing what the score is. This happened with the Knicks.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It's embarrassing, and it takes so much of the scrutiny off of George Hill for missing that free throw. It just, that man is probably so relieved that nobody is breathing down his neck for missing the free throw. And next thing you know, say Golden State were to rebound that thing and win the game themselves that way. Oof. That would have been rough.
Yeah.
Now, again, allow me to say this one more time. Imagine watching the NBA Finals and not appreciating what LeBron James does. Before overtime, the man scores 49 points. Is the reason you're in this game.
He is the reason.
And that pass toward George Hill.
He's the reason that moment happens.
That pass to George Hill. Fires that thing. Darts it. It's on the mark.
It's right
there. And Klay Thompson trips him.
Yep. The foul happens. Hill gets two.
Like, he hit that thing on a slant pass that makes NFL quarterbacks jealous.
Yeah.
Seriously. That was a great pass by LeBron James. But, yeah. It's one of those things where I just could not... And that was, even with the block charge reverse, the blocking foul that was then called on LeBron James after he was clearly outside of the restricted area. They reviewed to see if he was in the restricted area. And then they saw, oh, hey, that wasn't actually a block. He didn't draw the charge. So that's Warriors ball. The refs screwed that one up. I'm not going to worry about, like, oh, hey, Draymond stepped in the free throw lane early. during George Hill's missed free throw. A, it didn't matter. J.R. Smith out-rebounded Kevin Durant for it. And B, more importantly, that happens every second free throw. That happens all the time.
Yeah, it does.
So why they released that report, I don't know. Why they mentioned that in the report, I should say. I don't know. I'm not sure how entertaining this series is going to be from the rest of the way out. Because, good Lord, how demoralizing was that moment, though, from J.R. Smith? The Warriors dominate overtime. And it's not even close.
No.
And that's the future that I see in this series.
What was it, like a 12-2 in overtime or like 14-4? Something like that.
They outscored them by 10.
Yeah. But it was like something like 14-4 or something.
Yeah, it was.
Or 13-3, I think. I don't know. It's something like that. But still, yeah, it's... Cleveland will only stay in the series as long as LeBron keeps putting up those performances.
And that is... That's a shameful thing to have to ask for.
It is.
Strangely enough, like in that game, everyone's thinking out loud, why are you allowing this matchup to continue where LeBron James is on Steph Curry?
Yeah.
Because they were worried about, you know, Bron kicking it out, being the facilitator that he is, and letting other people chuck it up. Hey, Cleveland shot 27% from the three-point line. You should have just let him try to keep chucking it outward. Because let those guys take those open shots. Because open and uncontested, they still didn't hit them. For all that Kevin Love did well in that game, 21 points.
Mm-hmm.
One of only three people to put up double digits. Love still was only 1-for-8 from three-point land.
Yeah.
The only other person to put up double digits was J.R. Smith at 10.
J.R. Smith.
And he barely hit that at 10.
He hit 10. Played 38 minutes.
And did he have... He had a basket in overtime, didn't he?
I don't even remember.
I think he did.
Sure. God, imagine the outlook at this series if Cleveland pulls out of that game with the win.
If Cleveland has the win, that's monumental.
Yeah.
Because A, I don't see a sweep anymore.
Obviously.
And B, maybe Cleveland goes ahead and has a little more belief in themselves.
Yeah. Now LeBron has to be thinking going into tonight's game. LeBron's got to be thinking, I got to do more than 50, because he's going to think I got to put my team in a position where that will not happen again.
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think it's as simple as this: a whole team had a bad shooting day from 3-point land. The entire team. LeBron was the best. LeBron made the most. He was at 3-of-7. George Hill had the best percentage at 2-for-4. But George Hill from 3-point land was 2-for-4. The only other point that he had was a free throw.
Yeah, the one.
And he could have made the second. He was 2-of-6, which meant 0-for-2 for other field goals that weren't 3-point shots.
Yeah,
I think the reason no one's
saying anything about George Hill missing that second free throw is because that happens. You know,
someone's got to know the score.
Yeah, I mean,
and when you see the TV catch a man say,
happens
when the TV cameras catch a man saying, and people can read lips pretty easily.
Yeah,
I thought we were ahead, and then you see the eyeballs of LeBron James with a fire that I've
needed. Yeah,
man, I think that if the Warriors are going to change their system, and I think it might come back to bite them. This was a really bad shooting day from everyone. Clarkson, 0-of-3. Green, 1-of-6. Korver, 1-for-3. Smith, 2-of-6. Hill, 2-for-4. Love, 1-for-8, all from the three-point line. When you look at it, there was only one player, not named LeBron James, that had a field goal percentage of over 50%, and that was Larry Nance Jr. He was 4-for-6, no attempts of 3 points, and he missed 3 free throws in that game.
Yeah.
if you go ahead and give this team another chance to replicate everything here and let LeBron James kick it, they might actually show up. Or they might actually be the trash that we think that they are. All you need is a good shooting day from some of your supporting cast.
Yeah, it wasn't even a good shooting day for Golden State, though, as well. Their three-point percentage was 361, 36%, mm-hmm. whereas Cleveland's was 27.
Yeah. It just...
No, 36 isn't that bad.
That doesn't make me feel good about the rest of this series. At all.
I think what it does say, though, is if as long as LeBron keeps having these performances, which
how much likely can you, will. How much can you really ask for, though?
Yeah. But what it's going to... If he can continue that.
If he has one... down stretch
and a down game could still be like 35 points.
And I mean,
but if that happens, it's probably going to be Golden State winning by like 20.
The shameful thing is, a down stretch for LeBron James is, oh no, he had maybe 2 minutes without a basket.
Yeah,
that's a down stretch for LeBron James.
Yeah,
the man put up 51 points.
Yeah.
By the way, that overtime was 17-7.
Wow. Still.
To have 51 points out of 107 before such a gaffe? How am I supposed to expect that the Cavaliers even have a chance? You need to win the games that are in front of you and you have a chance to take them. They didn't. And the Warriors got that second life in overtime, and they dominated the way that everyone thinks that they're going to.
Yeah.
So thank you, J.R. Smith, for robbing me of any more interest of this series. Because I had to work the game, so I had to watch the game. And I was actually into it. But guess what?
I was at my other job watching the game with a lot of my coworkers, too.
Now I can't, like, now I don't have any interest anymore. Because if you guys couldn't win that game, it makes me think that this team can win any of them.
I don't know. Well, we were talking about the free throws, too, with earlier.
They were bad.
For Cleveland, they were bad.
72%.
72%. Golden State was 95.
They missed one the whole game.
Yeah. That shows.
Yeah, it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, LeBron was 10 for 11. You had Love and J.R. Smith were both 2 for 2. Obviously, George Hill was 1 for 2. Korver took one and he missed it. And then Nance.
That was on a tech.
And that was on a tech, yeah. And then he had Nance Jr. 1 for 4.
Yeah, because that was when Korver's free throw was when Draymond poked LeBron in the eye.
Yeah.
Captain Insano shows no moisty. So, Draymond Green. Look, the Warriors are obnoxious at this point to me. Not just because of the fact that they win all the time. Not just because of the fact that Kevin Durant signed there like a snake. They are arrogant. There's a difference between being confident and what they're pulling. I'm sorry, but you don't get to go ahead and braggadocious the whole time when J.R. Smith derps his way to giving you an overtime that you shouldn't have even had. So shut up. That's what I think at this point. It's fun to talk trash, yes. But I'm sorry, Draymond Green. Why are you dancing at the guy that dropped 51 on you? And probably is going to do so all series.
Yeah.
Sorry, bro. But step off.
You can make fun of J.R. Smith all you want.
Make fun of Smith. Make fun of Hill. Make fun of anyone that ain't LeBron James,
pretty
bro.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
But no, you decide, oh, I'm going to dance on this guy. Because we're going to win in overtime because we ran away with it. Oh, wait, maybe overtime shouldn't have even happened.
Yeah.
Like, Tom Wilson sometimes makes it hard for me to cheer for the Caps. How the hell does anyone cheer for the Warriors when Draymond Green is a jackass?
Because they're Warriors fans.
It's called bandwagoners.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm happy that the NBA playoffs are at least fun.
You know what? They were at least fun this year.
But now, I'm not watching this game. It better be close. Because if it's not, I'm losing interest. I'm gone. I can't watch this game. It's not because I'm choosing not to. It's because I'm actually doing something instead that's going to make sure that I am not going to be able to watch this game. I'm playing hockey. So yeah. I can't watch this game. If it's not close, I don't know if I am tuning in. Is that harsh? Maybe. But at the same time, you got to do something for me here. Give me a break here. Help me help you. Make me want to watch the rest of this series. Because LeBron dropped 51. 8 rebounds. Only 8 assists, which I was a little shocked at. But was still the best on the team. Dude. You gotta be kidding me. And to see it be lost like that, by the way, is incredible. The fact that J.R. Smith did not know the score, that is the part that I think really hurts.
Yeah.
It made me think, what are some J.R. Smith moments that we've seen? Braden Holtby had one pretty bad in game 3. Good thing that Devontae Smith-Pelly bailed him out and got him a nail in the coffin kind of goal to make it 3-1. Because Holtby turns it right over. Even if that didn't hit Belmar's stick, that was going to Nozick.
Yeah, but is that like a J.R. Smith moment?
No, but that's pretty derpy.
Yeah, you can talk a lot about what's derpy moments, but like a true J.R. Smith moment would be a player who makes a play trying to do something like in terms of running out the clock, not knowing that that wasn't the right situation that they should have done.
Jim Marshall, Vikings. Next best I could think of. Carver's a fumble running 66 yards the wrong way into his own end zone.
Yeah.
Dan Orlovsky running out of the back of an end zone for a safety. The Bills not recovering, not fielding a kickoff against the Jets.
That's a J.R. Smith moment.
It made me think, Frank, do you have any J.R. Smith moments personally?
None that I can think of.
I have one that's kind of like this.
Okay.
Kind of. It's not necessarily did you not know the score, but I didn't know something was going on that was actually pretty imperative to what we were doing. I was playing in a hockey game, and I was serving a coincidental minor, and I come out of the box after a whistle has blown. I go right on the ice, as per the instruction from my friends, from my team.
Yeah.
And I line up to play at center, and I'm trying to cover the slot, and the whole time we're shorthanded. And I'm scrambling. Like, oh my God, these guys are everywhere. How good are these players that we're facing right now? It turns out we were shorthanded down a man, and I had no idea.
So you forgot that.
I didn't even know we were shorthanded.
In between the time of you being on the bench after serving your penalty to going out there for
the next
shift.
I went from the penalty box to the ice for this coincidental
minor. And you were still shorthanded at the time.
The reason the whistle blew is because another penalty was called.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So it was 5-on-4, and I had no idea.
Okay.
And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell? Like, do we suck this bad right now? Nope. It was because we were down
perfect. I have had something similar to that. But remember, I'm a goalie. But it's not as bad because what had happened was...
There's my situational awareness one there.
Yeah.
So I can laugh at J.R. Smith because I've been there before.
The closest I would have is something similar where...
Except I don't get paid to do this.
Where, in a game, my team was shorthanded. And I was yelling at my bench saying, hey, we only got 4 people out there when we're shorthanded. I forgot we were shorthanded. Now, nothing really happened. It was because this was during a floor hockey game, so the ball was in the other end of the rink. So it didn't really affect anything. I just forgot for a brief second that we were shorthanded. I realized we were shorthanded after I yelled that.
See, but that was nothing like not knowing the score, which is pretty bad. It's pretty egregious.
Yeah.
And it's probably.
I just think, like, in that moment, how are you not getting it to LeBron no matter what? No matter what. The ball's tipped to you. LeBron's right there. And he's right there. Just get it to him. Regardless of what the score is, regardless of the score, regardless of how much time's left, how are you not getting it to LeBron in that situation? Regardless.
Yeah,
because he was open.
The rest of the team could have called timeout. There's so many ways that this could have ended better for them. But J.R. Smith took the ball and went the other way.
Yeah, he tried to
milk the clock when that was not something that should have been happening.
Yeah.
And that's on you, bro.
Yep.
I can't believe that. But, again, this was a game they could have won, should have won, I think, at this point. And they didn't. And if they can't win that game,
like I would say more could have.
And if you can't,
they win had that a chance. Game, let's just say,
got to put it away.
If they had to get a road win, this was it.
This was it. And now you have a Warriors team that's reinvigorated because of it.
Yeah.
So my interest in this series is kind of turned off now. But you know what isn't? My Washington Capital pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course. Vegas is going to win another game at least. At least. But they were kind of looking dreadful yesterday.
Two straight wins for the Caps.
Two straight wins for the Caps, winning games two in game three. But further than that, Alex Ovechkin is shedding the unfair label that was put upon him.
He is playing.
You want to know why he's shedding it?
He's playing on a whole nother level.
You want to know why he's shedding it, though? Because Ovechkin always plays like this. The rest of the team is showing up on a consistent basis. Kuznetsov has 27 points in the playoffs, leading the postseason. Braden Holtby, one gaffe aside, has been stellar in the last two games.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost saved that one, too, by the way. That would have been sick.
That saving game, too, at the end?
Yeah.
My God.
But that one's luck, you know? Like,
still.
He almost got that Nozick goal, too. That's the strangest thing.
Yeah. Still, man. That save. That's the save of the year.
It probably is, based on everything.
Oh, my God.
Now,
a true game-saving save.
Yes.
As a goalie, I appreciate that so much. I love it.
Yeah, because there's only one thing you can do at that point. Dive in desperation.
I literally screamed when he made that save.
I
was in such a high-pitched voice saying, oh my God, he got that. Oh my God, he got that. In such a high-pitched voice. I don't want to do it now, but that's what I did when I saw that save.
Give
that to me. Do you want me to?
No, don't.
Okay. I was going to put the mic back to do it.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
I'm not going to do it.
But no, I could not believe how well the Capitals are playing in this series. They've established the physical nature of it, and now it's just becoming a mean series.
Yeah.
You had Orpik getting the hit reversed on him by James Neal. Kuznetsov left game two with a hit from Braden McNabb.
But he did play last night. He
played last night. He was just fine.
Yeah, he looked fine. Got an assist on the OV goal. Ovi just keeps scoring, man.
He keeps scoring because he's really good at the scoring.
He's really good.
Who would have thought?
Holtby made 37 saves in game two.
And this is what it is. Alex Ovechkin was unfairly given this choker label because the rest of his team would regularly not show up in the second round.
Yeah.
Now, you're seeing Braden Holtby standing on his head like he usually does. You're seeing Evgeny Kuznetsov becoming the leading scorer in the playoffs. And Alex Ovechkin is still doing his thing.
They still won games without Nicklas Backstrom.
They won games without Backstrom. In games one and two, I thought that Andrei Burakovsky was their best player. And Burakovsky plays on the third line. They have won games without Backstrom. They won a game without Kuznetsov because he left early in that game too.
Yep.
Lars Eller has stepped up. Lars Eller had a 3-point game in game two.
He did.
I kind of want to see more from TJ Oshie.
Well, you'll always.
I said kind of. Yeah.
He did get an assist last night.
He has ups and downs.
He did get an assist last night. You always want to say that, even when teams are going on these playoff runs, these runs like that. There's always going to be. Well, you want to see more out of
disgusting play to John Carlson in game one.
The little wrap pass around the skates
of the defenseman to Carlson wide open in the slot.
You've seen
peaks and valleys from Oshie, but the peaks have been really good. The valleys have kind of just been he's there and he's bringing a physical presence, but he's not really producing. But Burakovsky, Burakovsky's been a consistent threat helping you roll lines.
Yeah.
The fourth lines on both of these teams have been fantastic in production.
Mm-hmm. Devontae Smith-Pelly is just scoring big goals.
Timely goals.
Every goal he scored has been big in the playoffs.
Timely goals.
Yeah, such timely goals.
It was an unfortunate whiff by Shea Theodore. Up the boards there as Beagle's pressuring him.
Yeah.
Beagle puts that feed on perfectly.
That was
Smith-Pelly has a step.
Back pass.
He has a step on Englund.
Yeah.
And Englund's just reaching in horror knowing what's going to happen.
Just doing what he could.
That's just a reaching in horror. You're just looking and hoping that something
happens.
Doing
what you can. You're doing everything you can.
Fleury has cooled down a little bit from the astronomical pace he was at.
Yeah.
At first, it was Fleury might win this Conn Smythe, win or lose. Now, it's come down to earth. Now they have to win it for him to get that trophy.
Yeah.
Because they've solved him a little bit.
Yeah, he has.
It's not
10 goals already in the series.
It's not that they're victimizing him. It's that, they're getting pucks past him now.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking like his normal self more so than the 947 he was carrying.
He's definitely been
he's still been good.
Down. He's still been really good.
He's still been good and he's still made some fancy saves.
Making great saves.
But he's now not.
He's not getting those extra bounces that kept the puck.
He's not rocking a 9-4.
Yeah. I've just. Like, Washington, they're getting the bounces. That's what I've noticed.
And this is what I was saying in our preview. These Caps have shown something bad happens, you hit them in the mouth, they're punching you right back.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what's been going on. Vegas. In that game one, it was back and forth between those two teams. And it was a fun game. It was so entertaining. Every time the Caps got hit,
they hit back.
Every time they got scored on, they scored back. Except for the last one. That was kind of important. But you saw a team that doesn't quit.
Yeah.
And you saw a team that, unlike years before, they wouldn't choke it away. They would fight.
Mm-hmm.
Game two, you saw a completely different mentality from what you'd see in years past from Washington. And that's what they've been all season. And in this postseason in particular. That was why I picked Washington. It wasn't because of the fact that they're still the better team when it comes to skill. I thought more so, this team is not going to give anything up. It's not coming easy for anyone. That trap is a defensive style that also includes speed and skill to it. It's like a trap on steroids. Except, when they're coming back the other way, it's Ovechkin and Backstrom and Kuznetsov and Oshie. And Evgeny Kuznetsov has been getting some of the best zone entries. Burakovsky's been getting great zone entries on a consistent basis for that team. Their fourth line, despite it being with the names of Jay Beagle, Devontae Smith-Pelly, and Chandler Stephenson, that's speed.
Speed on that line. It's been getting in the rough areas, and it's been scoring big goals.
But now you got to look at this and think to yourself, what's going on with the depth of Vegas? The only line consistently showing up is the fourth one. Well, and that first line, they just didn't get a goal in Game Three. Marchessault was trying everything, including putting some major disrespect on Dmitry Orlov. That was not nice. But you're not seeing anything from the likes of an Alex Tuch or
Cody
Egan line.
Tuch was also the one who got robbed by Holtby in game two.
Got it. But at the end of the day, you got to finish.
No, but
you're not hearing much of that.
Marchessault's doing what he can. He had four shots in game three. William Karlsson has been the one that's mainly been shut down. Riley Smith too in game three. Both of them did next to nothing.
Yeah.
No shots, no points, just some hits. Riley Smith took a penalty. Although William Carlson was, he was 50% on faceoffs.
But, you know, James Neal has a goal in this one, but at the same, but you're not hearing anything from David Perron, who's supposed to be one of your depth scorers on your second line.
Yeah, he was minus three.
Yeah, but you're looking at a team that the depth that they have is suddenly kind of disappearing. Howla, I haven't heard Eric Howla's name that often.
Yeah. Well, you know what I've noticed? Part of Vegas's game, part of what has made them so successful, you know, based off their speed, has been their transition game. They get their goals primarily on the rush or through turnovers, obviously. You saw with the Nosek goal.
Yes.
But Neal, game two, that was a goal that was on the rush. Puck was flipped in. It was being flipped into the zone. He managed
to hand it down. He
managed to get the puck as it was coming down on Orlov and just take a shot.
Yes. And it was a great shot.
It was a hell of a shot.
But again.
But that's not. But Washington is forcing Vegas to play with the puck more. To play with the puck more in the offensive zone. Mm-hmm. They're trying to force Vegas to cycle more. To make different plays. And that has been something that's always been questioned about Vegas heading into the playoffs. Was they are better when they are on the rush.
Yes.
When they settle down, it's different. That's why their power play hasn't been great.
Because
they got to play with the puck more.
Yeah.
It's not about dictating pace or anything. It's just about Vegas cannot score goals when they are cycling the puck around. They can sometimes, but not all the time. And now it's being noticed because Washington's forcing Vegas to do it more. Mm-hmm. Most teams weren't able to make Vegas do it more. Washington has. And they're up 2-1 in the series now.
And this is why, I had a good feeling on Washington because if Washington was able to dictate the pace and dictate the physicality and make things happen that way, how they took the skill from Tampa Bay most times. Tampa had that in a 7-game series because Lars Eller took 5 penalties in a game. In a 2-game stretch, excuse me. Their power play was just unreal. Because they have Stamkos and Kucherov and blah, 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 blah. But even strength, those star players were nowhere to be seen. Why? Washington dictated what they were supposed to do. Their defense, while untouted, and John Carlson aside, is a list of nobodies. But they're all playing responsible hockey.
They're not all nobodies.
Are any of them defensive top pairings? Carlson aside.
The closest would probably be Matt Niskanen. Maybe Orlov.
And Niskanen's up there in years, but he plays responsible hockey.
Yeah. And you got Orlov, too.
Yeah. This is a team that is showing that they can dictate what you need to do in their zone. And Washington has done a great job with breakouts.
So far.
For the most part, against the Vegas forechecking pressure.
So far, Washington's structure has been working.
Yes.
Like I said, they're able to slow down Vegas, not just through hitting and out skating them. They're slowing down Vegas by forcing the Knights to play with the puck more in Washington's end. I'm talking when Vegas is in the offensive zone.
When they're in the offensive zone,
what you're seeing is Washington's structure. They're shutting down the lanes. They're getting they're getting the pressure, and they're forcing Vegas to make more passes. Remember what I just said. Vegas is better when they are on the rush. If it's a 2-on-2 rush, Vegas is more likely to score on the 2-on-2 rush. But they're less likely to score when they are forced to dump the puck in more often. And try to chase after it and establish offensive zone time.
And that has something to do with physical nature of your forwards. Washington has been able to match the skill of Vegas, but they bring a physical element that I knew that Vegas wasn't going to match. Of course, things can change. This is not a 3-game series.
Yeah, it's not over.
But I'm liking what I'm seeing from the Caps.
Same here. I really am. Yeah, and Holtby's just been good. He's been very good.
It's like he's a Vezina candidate most 21, years.
21. He only made 21 saves in game three.
Yeah. But yeah, that was, he didn't have, like, he had to make the, he had to make the big saves when needed.
Yeah.
See the Marchessault play. But like you said, they're able to get in the shot lanes. Carlson had four blocks. And they also did it without Brooks Orpik for most of that game.
Yeah.
Christian Jews skated 8 minutes and 40 seconds last night as a defenseman.
Well, bottom pair defenseman.
Dude, a bottom pairing defenseman still gets at least 10 minutes in a game.
Yeah.
But you're seeing the likes of Niskanen and Orlov and Carlson really stepping up in this one. And consistently being able to get in these shot lanes. The only player without a block shot in last night's game, for example, was Brooks Orpik. And he got injured.
Yeah. And he still played more than Christian Jews.
But again, you're seeing a team that is able to bring it. They can hit you. They can outgun you. And that's terrifying. It's such a healthy mix. Only two players didn't hit someone in that game, in that game three. And you could probably guess who the forward was.
Yeah, I see it.
And that's Nicholas Backstrom.
Yeah, shocker.
Dmitry Orlov didn't get a hit registered as a defenseman, but that's not his game.
It's also not his game. He also skated the most out of any, well, the second most out of any defenseman.
No.
Played 26 minutes. Niskanen played 27. That's their top pairing right now.
And it's working.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Right now, everything's working. They're doing well in the faceoff circle. That means establishing possession. And they're doing well in the physical department. And that's helping them kind of dictate what has to be done. Vegas had to have played a structured and physical series against the Kings. The only difference was Marc-Andre Fleury was standing on his head so much, and the Kings don't know how to score if a net was 10 by 6. I like this series. It's been very fun. It's been very engaging.
Yeah.
Everything about it, from the scoring, from the passing plays, the breakouts, the zone entries even, you get to appreciate.
I'm wondering if we'll see more physical Vegas team in game four.
They're going to need to bring something a little more physical.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you've got some guys on your defense, Englund, McNabb, that can throw the body around.
And obviously you got Reeves and Bellemare.
Bellemare, I don't think, is much of a hitter, though.
He's
more of that productive, like, fourth liner.
He's, who would I compare it to?
He's like a Jay Beagle, I think.
Yeah.
A guy who has a little bit of skill to him.
Has some skill, has the grit, has the physicality.
But he's not going to hit you all the time.
He uses it when he needs to.
Yeah, but he's not going to be a known hitter. He's a guy who can...
He'll throw the body. Yeah, he will get into the boards, into the dirty areas when he needs to. But he's a very smart player.
Yes, that's the thing. He uses that instinct a little more as the fourth liner, more so than the physicality.
Game four is tomorrow.
Game four tomorrow.
Wow.
I'm ready.
I'm ready too.
Let's go.
Yeah. I've been enjoying this series.
I'm still
so
thinking
far.
It's Washington 6, so Vegas is going to do something and steal one.
I have Vegas at 5. That's not happening anymore, so whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this series has gone.
This series is going
to
go the distance.
In a way that I've kind of expected it to.
This series is going to go the distance.
I really feel like it will.
It will.
Yeah, but the series has gone kind of where I expected it to be. You know, Washington is just doing a much better job than what I thought they were going to do in stifling Vegas's speed by forcing them to do more in the offensive zone. Because like I said, when Vegas can't do more when they have to do more in the offensive zone, it's actually worse for them.
Yes.
And that's been apparent for pretty much the whole playoffs, the whole season for them.
Because they have the speed in the breakout, and it allows them to cross over and, you know, really try to allow for chaos.
But they don't have the star power to be able to establish offensive zone time.
It also involves physicality. And that is where Washington can grind them down.
Yeah.
I had that feeling that Washington was going to be able to not just match their skill, but really start to hit them a lot.
I think, too.
And that's where their problem's lying. Because when you dump and chase, you're going to be hitting somebody. Someone's going to come after you.
This is also showing just how important it is to have really good centermen. Because look at the center cores for both teams.
Well, and Carlson may have scored Eric 40 Howell, goals. But.
Yeah. Cody Eakin or Ryan Carpenter and Bellemare versus Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Eller, and Beagle.
Yes.
I mean, Jay Beagle may only be a fourth line center who can easily be replaced, but he's really good at faceoffs. He's been very productive for them so far. When Washington has that matchup advantage right away.
Mm-hmm.
They can establish their game a lot quicker than Vegas can.
Not to
because
mention,
they can have the puck because when they win the faceoffs, puck possession.
Not to mention, Nick Backstrom is the number one center on a lot of other teams.
So is Evgeny Kuznetsov.
Well, he's the number one center on this team too. So
based on the lines, I would say let's be real. Backstrom's our number one center.
Eistein would say different.
He's also been hurt, too.
Yeah, but...
it's also based on the lines that they're rolling right now, because, remember, in years past, it was always Ovechkin and Backstrom together.
Yes.
Even when Kuznetsov was there, it was always Ovechkin and Backstrom. But when you have depth, you can shuffle the lines however you want. So, Ovechkin and Kuznetsov are together, and Backstrom and Oshie are together.
And then you can just do whatever you want with the other wingers.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much exactly how it is. Yeah.
This has been a very fun series.
Oh, it's so much fun.
Again, if we don't get 6 or 7, you're getting ripped off.
But that depth, too, allows Tom Wilson to play with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov and Jakub Vrána to play with Oshie and Backstrom.
And then you still even have depth on your third line with Lars Eller and Andrei Burakovsky there.
With Brett Connolly.
Hanging out with Brett Connolly.
Yeah.
Who was a top 10 pick in an NHL draft.
He was a 6 overall pick at one point.
That hurts.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a whiff.
Yeah.
But again, he's working it right now for Washington. So.
Yeah, he seems to finally found a place.
Found a place as a third-line winger. It's unfortunate, but again, he's not going to trade it if he gets to hoist a cup.
It's true.
Yeah, I think... if Washington wants to be able to dictate everything else in this series, though, they have to have this game 4. And yeah, I almost said the cliche must win thing. If Washington wants to be able to truly dictate everything from here on out, a 3-1 series lead is a hard thing to argue against.
It's true.
And that will change everything, I would say, in the dynamics of it. Of course, it's a must win game for both teams. Duh. But It will be. There's a different sense if Washington goes back to Vegas up in a series 3-1.
Oh my God! Yeah.
So there it is. Yeah. This is going to be an interesting series for the rest of the way forward, and it's already been so much fun.
I'm so excited. Tomorrow night. Let's do it. Monday night, 8:00.
Indeed.
Game 4, DC. Let's make. Whew. I wonder what'll happen.
More scoring, I'm going to guess.
Hopefully.
Is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Caps have at least put up 3 goals in each game.
Yeah.
If you had to say it right now, though, Conn Smythe favorites.
Ovechkin.
I might say Kuznetsov.
I say Ovechkin because he is willing that team. Kuznetsov has been fantastic for them. But this is still Ovechkin's team. And He has put up them on his back. He's the one scoring the goals.
I won't,
because that's how they get a goal in game three. But Ovechkin's just been scoring.
What has been
he
helping?
Has just been. He even though with what Kuznetsov has been, even how good Kuznetsov has been playing, Ovechkin's just been playing better.
I wouldn't even necessarily say it's better. It's that he's also still right there on all the scoring totals. He's leading the playoffs now in goals because Mark Scheifele isn't playing anymore. He had 14 and 17 games. Good Lord.
Yeah.
But Ovechkin's got 25 points, two behind Kuznetsov. So it's not like his point per game clip is that much worse.
Yeah.
I look at this, but again, I think, though, that Kuznetsov, he really has been dynamic, just as dynamic as Ovechkin.
Yeah, he has.
Like I said, I might say Kuznetsov. Ovechkin's obviously going to be a favorite in this.
He's my favorite.
And if it goes Vegas' way, do you really have an answer other than?
Flurry
for this? No, not really.
Not really. Unless, like, Marchessault has, like, six goals in these last four games.
Yeah.
And, like, scores a Stanley Cup winning goal in overtime. Even if he does that, probably still goes to Fleury.
Hey, you're absolutely right, though. They need more down the middle from the Vegas forwards.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. Yo. This month, Rasmus Dahlin becomes a Buffalo Sabre.
Yes. 3 weeks.
3 weeks away from it.
Yes. Yes.
Figured I'd give some good news there.
That is very good news.
And he was at the combine. He's been kind of getting around Buffalo a little bit. And according to reporters, he's been, you know, kind of getting used to the city because he's probably going to have to call it home. Good. Let's 19 go.
19 days.
19 days away from the NHL draft, and it's
going from to be, Rasmus Dahlin being a Sabre.
It's a glorious day and a glorious time.
I can't wait.
I've been loving these playoffs without the Sabres. You know what it's going to make me do? It's going to make me hate the playoffs when the Sabres get in here again, because the mental stress of having to actually cheer for a team and having stakes in it.
Yeah.
That's going to suck again.
Yeah.
It's going to kill us.
Not unless they go on a playoff run.
No, that's going to kill us.
No.
You want to know why?
It will kill us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Heart attacks. They are a real thing, Frank. Stress, anxiety. But it's
better than being sad about missing the playoffs.
That is true.
I want to be there again. I want to be there again as a Sabres fan.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
That's all that matters.
Hey, this has been the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
Always know the score.
Yeah.
Toward the end of your games.
Yeah.
Other than that, thank you for listening, as always. And, hey, we got more of this stuff around the corner. Bills OTAs are going to finish up next week. Mandatory mini camp coming around the corner as well. So if someone doesn't show up, we've got a problem. I hope everyone shows up. And also, by the way, I love how non-stories are still non-stories. Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady aren't at voluntary OTAs. Oh, no. Both of them have publicly said, yeah, we'll be at minicamp. Why are you worried? So non-story is still a non-story.
Yeah.
The real holdout guys I would want to look at are players like Aaron Donald. You know, players really gearing for that contract. Khalil Mack. You know, those guys, they might really be gearing for something because they're generational talents and amongst the top at their position that are just getting into the league. Gronkowski and Brady, they've made many, many, many on many millions of millions. And the only thing they care about is preserving their bodies because they are broken and one is old. That's it. So, of course, they're going to do things their way. Non-stories are non-stories. Remember that.
It's true.
Thanks for listening. As always, it's fun doing these things. And admitting I had a J.R. Smith moment that, granted, it wasn't the score, but it happened. I had a lack of awareness once.
all you people at WGR have a lack of awareness.
Sure.
It's Wine and Line Guy. I can't not do it anymore. it's just one of those things. When you hear it enough, or when you have to deal with hearing the Wine and Line calls and having to pick one, you'll understand. You will understand.
Okay. So,
I don't suggest it. It's a rite of passage, though. It really is. So, oh well. I'm rambling. I think it's time to go. I'm Derek.
I'm Frank.
Thanks for listening. Always check the scoreboard, kids.